If you ask a chap to list those organs that give him most pleasure and pride, the second one he thinks of will usually be his brain. For all higher animals, the nervous system, comprising the brain, the spinal cord, and the nerves that connect them with the rest of the body, plays a central role in almost every aspect of life. The central nervous system truly is central, and it's therefore not surprising that the embryo starts to build it very early in development, before anything else is there to get in the way. In all vertebrates, the central nervous system takes the form of a tube running under the dorsal midline. In mammals, complicated folding in the brain region can make the basic tubular structure of the CNS difficult to perceive in adults, but their embryos show it as clearly as does the embryo of the simplest fish. The neural tube derives from the ectoderm, and turning part of the skin-like outer covering into an internal tube requires a multi-stage process of cell arrangement called neurulation. The first thing that happens is that a broad stripe of cells along the dorsal midline becomes committed to making neural tissue. Once this has happened, the cells along the two edges of this stripe become wedge-shaped, with a thick apex and a narrow base, while cells along the middle of the stripe become wedge-shaped the other way. As they are attached to their neighbours, this wedging action bends the sheet, the centre folding down towards the middle of the embryo, making a deep valley. The cells of the surrounding ectoderm push the outer edges of this valley together until they meet, making what was an open trough be a closed tube. Some rearrangement of cell neighbours results in the neural tube dropping away into the embryo and the ectoderm healing over it. This closing over of the neural tube is an error-prone process and often fails, especially in fetuses carried by mothers who eat a diet deficient in folic acid. This failure leaves at least a small part of the neural tube open at the dorsal midline, a condition called spina bifida. The lesion can be small and low in the back, or it can extend right along the spinal cord, or, in extreme cases, it can leave even the back of the head open. When this happens, the brain cannot form, and the condition is called anencephaly. It is incompatible with life after birth, and usually causes spontaneous abortion well before. Enriching diets with folic acid has been a very successful strategy in reducing the incidence of spina bifida and anencephaly. But it is important to note that neurulation takes place before a woman knows she's pregnant, so there's no point in ensuring only expectant mothers are given good dietary advice. Rather, the intervention needs to be made at a population level, so it includes all who may become pregnant, whether deliberately or not. The sealing up of the neural tube can also result in a bizarre and very, very rare abnormality, ventricular fetus in fetu. This condition can only happen in a pregnancy that includes twins made by splitting of the inner cell mass, that is, twins that share a placenta. To the best of our understanding, it happens when the neural folds of one embryo close around its twin, probably a smaller twin. The result is that the small twin is internalized into the cavity of the neural tube of the larger. There it may survive and continue to develop, most commonly as a disorganized tumor, but occasionally as something recognizable as a human fetus. In 1982, Eshfar and colleagues wrote a fascinating case report of their removing from the brain of a child the distorted but living body of his unknown twin. Fetus in fetu occurs more often, though still very rarely, when the ectoderm of the ventral body wall surrounds a twin. Generally, the problem comes to light early, but is sometimes diagnosed only in an adult. Once the neural tube has formed, the body begins the business of segmentation. The external anatomies of invertebrate animals, such as earthworms, leeches, millipedes, and locusts, make it obvious that they are constructed of a repeating series of similar segments, some of which may become specialized to carry appendages, such as wings. Mammals are segmented too, but to see it one needs to look at the skeleton, which is based on a long stack of basically similar vertebrae, some of which are specialized to carry ribs or limb girdles. The segmented nature of the body is so fundamental that it's made very soon after the neural tube forms. When it is made, the neural tube is flanked by two long strips of mesoderm tissue. Starting at the level of the body that will become the top of the neck, these mesodermal strips become divided up into blocks called somites. Somites are precursors of vertebrae, although in a slightly complicated way. Somites also give rise to skeletal muscle and to the connective tissue of the skin. The division process is choreographed by a complicated interplay of two protein-based machines. One machine sees to it that only a zone about a somite's width from the last formed somite is allowed ever to form another. The other machine operates the clock, and every time this clock ticks, cells within the permissive zone defined by the first machine will actually go on to form a somite. By the time the clock ticks again, the newly formed somite will have defined another permissive zone tailwards of it, so the process can repeat until it reaches the caudal end of the embryo. It is the smooth running of the somite clock that gives us our predictable number of vertebrae. Animals such as snakes, with very large numbers of vertebrae, have somite clocks that tick very much faster than ours. The formation of somites brings a remarkable change to the young embryo. For the first time, it actually looks like a small animal. There is a clear head-to-tail axis, a neural tube, and an obviously segmented trunk. Perhaps the embryo too feels that it has succeeded in completing its first sketch, for it now concentrates on filling in the details by making sets of internal differences. In the early days, when the embryo needed to increase its internal complexity, that is, to increase the number of different cell types it had too little internal information to use, and it had to draw on outside sources of positional information, such as the presence or absence of a free surface. Now, though, there are internal differences, so they can themselves be used to make more. Consider, for example, a simple model embryo that has a tissue, let's call it A, sitting next to another tissue, D. The part of A in contact with D can respond to that fact by making tissue type B, while the part of D that was next to A can respond by making tissue type C. Where we started with just two tissue types, A and D, we now have A, B, C, D, which is 4. At the boundaries between each of these, the process can of course be repeated to create further tissue types. Within the real embryo, much of the patterning is controlled by cells' proximity, or otherwise, to the notochord. The notochord is a thin strip of connective tissue that, in humans, comes from cells that bud off the newly formed ectoderm layer during gastrulation. It runs just ventral to the neural tube. In the immediate evolutionary ancestors of vertebrates, the chordates, the notochord provides mechanical support throughout life. In vertebrates, its mechanical function is replaced by the vertebral column, and the notochord all but disappears by adulthood, its remnants clinging on as part of the intervertebral discs. The notochord remains of critical importance to our embryos, however, presumably because we still use the ancient body patterning mechanisms of our chordate ancestors. Cells of the notochord secrete a signalling protein called SHH. In every other animal, the protein gets its full name, sonic hedgehog, but some time ago an edict went out that human genes and proteins were to be referred to by initials rather than by flippant names, lest patients think that medical geneticists are mocking them. Depending on how close they are to the notochord, cells in the neural tube experience higher or lower concentrations of SHH, and these concentrations are used to determine whether the cells become motor neurons, near the ventral part of the neural tube and therefore near the notochord, interneurons, in the middle, or sensory neurons, near the dorsal part of the neural tube, therefore far from the notochord. Similarly, SHH from the notochord makes somite cells that experience high concentrations commit to being bone, while those that experience lower concentrations will become muscle or connective tissue of the skin. This sort of system is used over and over again in the body to divide it up ever more finely into detailed cell types and structures. As well as using signals from neighbouring tissues to instruct cells to make a new structure where they are, vertebrate embryos also make great use of their cells' abilities to move. The very dorsal surface of the neural tube, called the neural crest, gives rise to a population of highly migratory cells that spread through the body and make a diverse range of tissues, including sensory nerve cells, pigment cells of the skin, parts of the adrenal gland, and much of the face. These cells are guided by signals from the other cells that are staying put. Another important migration is made by primordial germ cells. We'll consider these more in the last of these podcasts. Copyright statement. This audio essay by Professor Jamie Davis is to support the first year MBCHB course at the University of Edinburgh. It is released under the terms of the GNU Public License. It may be distributed freely, but this copyright statement must remain with it, unaltered.